A lot happening around both these programs I mentioned. I think we forgot they actually play in a bowl game. Our guests host the Plank Show on KREF, the Ref, on 94.7 weekday mornings if you're ever in his part of the country. He's also an analyst, part of the Oklahoma football broadcast on the Sooner Sports Network. You can follow what he's up to on Twitter. Use the handle at Plank Show. Chris Plank joins us. Chris, much appreciate the time. How's life treating you and Norman these days?
Well, it's been curious. Much like I'm sure it has been for you, but I think we're now past the point where we worry about anything except December 29th and getting to San Antonio and watching an Alamo Bowl and seeing what these two teams look like.
You know, to date myself, I remember the legendary 1971 game of the century with Johnny Rogers and Nebraska, and the reason I bring this up is my whole life, Oklahoma is a blue blood of the blue bloods. So I just got to ask you, the moment we learned that Lincoln Riley was actually leaving for USC, what was it more, level of shock, surprise, anger? Because you could have knocked me over with a feather.
Yeah, I would say complete and utter shock. Just absolute positive shock. I have this take for quite a while with Lincoln, and it's not a knock on him by any stretch of the imagination, but Lincoln was a very private guy, and we didn't really know Lincoln Riley. You know, he didn't have a chummy relationship with anyone in the media. It wasn't bad. It's just, you know, there wasn't anyone that was his boy or that he talked to, and it was just, you know, it was different. It was distant, I think is the best way to put it. So, you know, couple months ago now, when the LSU rumors first started up, Lincoln Riley said in a press conference, well, you guys know me, and I think everyone in the media kind of looked around, and they're like, do we? You know, do we really know you? Do we know what you're about? So I think there was a lot of things, Steve, that went into it. Number one, we didn't really know Lincoln Riley. And number two, you know, he didn't really give us that opportunity to truly understand what's your goals, where do you want to be? Is Oklahoma truly a lifetime gig for you like it was for Bob Stoops? So, you know, I'm shocked. I'm surprised. I'm still flabbergasted by the whole thing. But I think for Oklahoma, it's gonna work out okay. And there was a long time when we thought it wouldn't.
You know, for those who might think of the new coach, Brent Venables, as the Clemson defensive coordinator, I mean, I have to tell you, he was a Bob Stoops guy. He was there 13 years, including the BCS title in 2000. So how much did landing a guy with a remarkable resume like Venables kind of cushion the disappointment of Riley leaving?
It more than cushioned it. And it was kind of a big, you know, try to censor myself, but bleep you to Lincoln Riley, because you know, it's kind of wild. You know, I just wrote an article for one of our local magazines, and I called it 9 days in November, because it was truly, and I guess honestly kind of ended up stretching almost into December, but it was this 9 day stretch where, you know, you went from being maybe as down as you could be after a loss to Oklahoma State in Bedlam in a game that, I mean, dude, you had it in your hands, and you lost it on several occasions. So you're not going back to the Big 12 championship game. And then you get the euphoric feeling of, all right, Lincoln Riley just said he's not going to LSU, so you feel better. And you wake up that Sunday morning, and he's gone to LSU. Then you have four guys and eventually a fifth decommit. You have four guys and eventually a fifth enter the transfer portal, and you're like, what in the world is going on here? And then, you know, you go through a week of speculation and, you know, for OU fans discovering that the new chat rooms are Twitter spaces, that there's rumors from people delivering likes to the university and trying to speculate what that means. And then finally, you know, this incredible party of, you know, 2,000 plus people that showed up at the local private airport to welcome him. It's just, it went from being I don't know where we are to being we're not only back, but we're going to be better. And, you know, honestly, in all of it, the guy who helped soften that blow as much as it was hiring Brent Venables was Bob Stoops, right, who's the interim coach in the bowl game that stood up and said, hey, I'm here to do whatever is necessary to make this work and make sure we don't falter.
We're talking with Oklahoma radio analyst and host Chris Plank. I know you weren't in Norman at the time. I think you were in Tulsa. So the Sooners, when they came here to Eugene in 06, I was in row two at the 50-yard line when Alan Patrick came out of the pile with the onside kick, and somehow they gave it to the Ducks. I wanted to ask you, do we need to discuss that, or can we just shake our heads at one of the worst calls in college football history?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's some people that are like, revenge, and I'm like, you guys understand that some of the guys on this roster were like, 5 years old when that happened. They have no idea. I was in Tulsa. I was doing an afternoon talk show, and I'll never forget, you know, my partner Jeremy Poplin and I were, well, okay, so you got hosed on the onside kick call, but then you gave up, you know, I think what, bam, 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 they scored three plays later. But the reality is, and Bob Stoops has talked about this quite a bit, the game was over, you know, and that was one of the hardest locker rooms he's ever had to deal with. So I think for, you know, Steve, like you and I, the old school fans, right, that remember right. The day of that. Yeah, it's a big deal to guys like us and, you know, the true diehard. You know, I know that you're talking to J.B. Long in a bit. J.B. Long's a Tulsa guy. I mean, he's young, so he wasn't in the market, but he could probably even attest to it. There's still people, whenever he was in Tulsa working at Channel 6, that were complaining about, oh, you know what happened against Oregon in 2006. It's wild how that thing is permeated. And I think it's the only time that Oklahoma has lost to Oregon, this very small kind of sample size of these two teams playing each other. So, yeah, listen, for you and I, it's a fun storyline. For Bob Stoops, you know, he's talking about Toby Keith tweeting him texting him the picture. It's a fun storyline for all the guys that are playing in this game, I'm sorry, they couldn't care less because most of them barely were watching football at that point.
They were in kindergarten. I love
it. Yeah, they were. They were kids. They were babies.
So today, obviously, the new December letter of intent signing day, I think there was a lot of similarities between Oregon and Oklahoma fans. What's going to become of it with the coaching change? How would you evaluate what you've learned about today's class and, you know, what kind of haul the Sooners made under these circumstances?
Well, I mean, Steve, this today had a chance to be a disaster. I mean, I can't think of really any other way to put it. This had a chance to be a really, really, really bad day in the history of Oklahoma Sooner football. But, you know, Brent Venables, but, and again, let's rewind a little bit. Bob Stoops stuck around, went on some recruiting trips, went into living rooms, talked to parents, sold people on exactly what this is all about, and it worked. You know, now, granted, there's some people that aren't here that were going to be a part of this recruiting class, and I think that's to be expected. But, you know, I was just sitting here right before we jumped on, and I was refreshing the 24/7 rankings, and, you know, Oklahoma has a top 10 class, which, you know, when, and not to filibuster on this and go on a recruiting rant or anything, but when Lincoln Riley had decided to leave, you know, Oklahoma was knocking on the door of a top 5 class, and there was a chance that maybe, just maybe, they could end up with as high as maybe a top 3, because, you know, with Relique Brown, who had been committed to them and ends up at USC, with, you know, the potential of a Marvin Jones Jr., who ended up signing with Georgia today, there were a lot of people that thought, hey, you know, this is a class that has a chance to really do something special. And when he left, you know, the Relique Browns are gone, the Marvin Jones Jr.'s are gone. You don't know what to do. So all that to say, kudos to Brent Venables, Bob Stoops, and that staff. You know, Jeff Lebby came in. They signed a quarterback of the 2022 class that was committed to Florida and a 6'5" wide receiver that was committed to Florida. They went in and did some last-second work, and they took a class that was very much on life support, and they kept it as a top-10 class. And listen, I'll add this to it as well just quickly. I mean, give credit to some of the dudes that stayed around because, I mean, they recruited other players.
Yep.
You know, the Jake Taylors, the big offensive lineman out of Vegas, went out and said, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere, and I'm not happy with this. And that helped solidify things for other players, which, again, they don't have a five-star in this class yet, but they got 12 four-stars, and that's pretty solid.
Yeah, the players recruiting players is such an undervalued
huge
aspect. Chris Plank on the line, Oklahoma radio analyst. You know, normally, to get to some of the specifics of this team, you think of Oklahoma, and it's a bunch of big-gun receivers, be it CeeDee Lamb, Marquise Brown, tight ends like Mark Andrews with the Ravens now. But this season, it seems a little different. Marvin Mims, a deep threat. They use their H-back. How would you describe, I guess, the pass catchers? Seems more even distribution as opposed to a go-to guy.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, when we think about the Alamo Bowl, one of the guys, well, two of the guys who we thought were going to be key figures, and a third is not even going to be there, right? Jane Hazelwood has entered the transfer portal, and I think if you looked at the numbers, I'll try to pull them up here quick, but I want to say he was the third leading receiver for the Sooners this season, and, you know, he's in the portal. You know, he's off
right
to Arkansas. Austin Stogner, he's in the portal, and he didn't have as big of a season as he'd had in years past, but he's off to South Carolina, and, you know, for Theo Weiss, he wasn't able to stay healthy this season, and as it stands now, he's in the portal too. So, yeah, you're right. This has been a weird year on the receiving side of things for the Sooners, but in the same vein, it's kind of been a weird year on the offensive side of things for them as well, right? They, you know, you've seen a team that struggled to score points early in the season, and then, you know, when they finally got their offense going, suddenly their defense, the bottom fell out of their defense, and then when their defense got better in their final couple of games of the season, they couldn't score a point. So, receivers to keep an eye on, you know, for the bowl game are Marvin Mims. He really hasn't had a big breakout game yet. Mike Woods, the Arkansas transfer, who's playing his last game. And a kid named Mario Williams, who, you know, he hasn't really been what I think was expected. But then again, it's a little unfair because everyone compared him to Marquise Hollywood Brown. He's just a freshman, but was still on freshman All-American teams. I'll tell you the one guy, and I'm not just saying this because his dad's coaching the game, that will be fun to see receiver-wise is Drake Stoops, right? Drake missed the last two games with a
right
groin injury. But you're right. It's been a little bit of a different world because, you know, all the receivers that you talked about in the past, you didn't really have one go-to guy that really stepped up this season. And it was surprising.
A couple final thoughts. Obviously, a big matchup in this game is going to be Oregon's offensive line going against Isaiah Thomas, Perrion Winfrey on the nose, the Sooner defensive line. For Duck fans kind of getting caught up, what could you tell us about the caliber of that group who's coached by a pretty good former Sooner lineman himself in Calvin Thibodeau?
Yeah, and this is the great question heading into this game because the two guys you mentioned have opted out. So, you know, you look at the position that's been hit the hardest by opt-outs right now, it's been the defensive line. And it's funny because Calvin Thibodeau is coming back to coach this defensive line, but as soon as this game is over, he's off to Dallas to take over as the SMU defensive line coach. So, you know, it's wild. We just learned last night Brian Odom, who had been the Sooners linebackers coach, he's going to call the defense for this game. You know, Brent Venables, even though he's the new coach, isn't really going to be involved at all. He'll get a fresh start as soon as the bowl game is over. But, you know, B.O., Brian Odom's on his way to USC, but he's going to call the defense for the bowl game. And, you know, if that's the big – what is it going to look like? You know, we have no idea. Perrion Winfrey, Nick Benito, Isaiah Thomas have all opted out. Brian Asamoah, their starting linebacker, has opted out. You know, you look at that linebacker position and that, you know, Jamal Morris, who was a guy that maybe you could look at as someone who could make an impact as an inside backer. He's on in the transfer portal, right? And Jamal hasn't played much, but you're just thinking about guys who could use the bowl game as an opportunity. So it's the great unknown heading into that game, to be honest. What will the Sooner defense look like? Because is there good depth on that defensive line? Absolutely, there is. But we're talking about three key pieces who have made it clear that they're not going to be there. So names that I would say you can keep an ear open for are guys like Kelvin Gilliam. He's a true freshman that didn't play much this year. But, you know, maybe Calvin Thibodeau looks at it and says, okay, kid, go give it a chance. Clayton Smith, Brendan Walker, edge rushers who haven't played much this year. But Jamar Cain, who's coming back for this bowl game before he leaves to USC, says, all right, kid, go make a statement, right? Maybe it's some of these guys that are trying to continually improve their draft stock in the secondary, like a Pat Fields and a Laron Turner-Yell. But you hit it on the head, man. That battle is going to be in the trenches because we don't know who's going to go for Oklahoma. We have no idea. And they've had one practice since Lincoln Riley left. What? One. And maybe that picture will clear up a little bit more as we get closer, but yeah, man, you nailed it. That battle in the trenches is so unknown right now.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say Coach Thibodeau has eligibility left and he's going to suit up.
We might need him.
You know, the last thing is I like to step outside the Eugene bubble. Like Oklahoma, we know the coaching change, an interim guy. Oregon did win 10 games. They won the Pac-12 North. So from your observations or what you've heard from the coaches, fellow analysts, and players, what kind of stands out about this particular Duck team that has folks' attention in Norman?
Yeah, we just talked about it last night on our huddle show. Athleticism, right? Freak athletes all over the field. And, you know, that's – listen, I know this is a Captain Obvious thing, and you guys can make fun of me when I get off the air for it, but Oklahoma has always struggled with kind of with overly athletic people. and I think that's the case for just about every single one in college football. But, listen, I know that the Thibodeaus aren't going to play in this game, and I get that, but – there are still dudes. I mean, they're not guys. They're dudes that are all over this roster. And listen, I've watched a lot of Oregon football because I've done a lot of radio with my guy Jeff Schwartz. And, you know, listen, I'm not trying to turn this into a softball conversation, but you do have the best in Melissa Lombardi out there coaching your softball team. So, you know, it's always had a very, nice, very special place in my heart. Oregon has. And, you know, she just brought over, not only to help her out, Sam Martyr, who was with us here at Oklahoma last year. But my point is I watch a lot of Oregon sports because I want to support them. And this is just a team that, with its makeup, and I don't know what the roster is going to look like heading into this game, but it's the type of roster that gives Oklahoma problems. You know, big physical teams, Oklahoma has kind of been able to match it. I know that sounds crazy because Baylor was able to push them around, but even with kind of an undersized defensive line, Oklahoma's done a good job. Quick athletic teams that can make you miss in space, there's the big problem for Oklahoma over the last couple of seasons. And I just think with the Jaylen Browns of the world and kind of what this offense looks like, I think it could give them problems. I think what I'm most intrigued by is to see, you know, the Oklahoma offensive line is interesting. You know, their starting center got hurt in the next to last game. He didn't play in Bedlam. You know, they've got their right tackle and their left guard who's moving on to the next level. But their left tackle, Anton Harrison, has a lot to prove. So as intrigued as I think everyone is with what the Oregon offensive line can do with the Oklahoma defensive line, I'm as intrigued to see, okay, what's this Oregon defensive line going to be able to do against this Oklahoma offensive line? Because that's an area where I really think Oregon can make some noise, and that's even without Kayvon Thibodeau. So, you know, I got to admit, I was one of the biggest proponents of them getting love after they beat Ohio State, and I was the biggest proponent of them getting crushed after they lost to Stanford. But, you know, in the end, I think it played out to where both teams, Oklahoma and Oregon, kind of finished where they deserve to finish, right? And it could be a different world if Kayvon Thibodeau was healthy all season long, but again, I'm excited for this matchup because I love watching two brands go at it. Oklahoma and Oregon, to me, are two big brands in college football. I'm curious to see if Anthony Brown can get going. I'm curious to see if we'll see some of the young guys. And I think Oregon has a lot to prove, too. I don't know if the interim coaches have a lot to prove. I mean, Bob Stoops just came back from a Hall of Fame ceremony, but I am very much intrigued to see what kind of game we get on the 29th.
Well, I tell you, both fan bases would have bought into each season being like a roller coaster ride at Disney World, to say the least.
It was.
Folks,
it
was. A lot of great insight. He's Chris Plank. If you're ever in the area, it's the Ref, 94.7 weekday mornings. He's also an analyst. He'll be part of the great Oklahoma football broadcast. Follow what he's up to on Twitter. The handle is @PlankShow. Chris, really appreciate you carving out some time to join us. Terrific insight and information. Really appreciate it. Wishing you and yours a healthy, happy, and sane Christmas.
Yeah, man, you too. And go get out to the Jane and support that OU, that Oregon softball program. Missy Lombardi, Sam Marta, they're going to crush. That is a big-time hire a couple years ago. So I appreciate you guys having me on. Call anytime. Can't wait for the Alamo Bowl.
All right. Have a good one, Chris. Thanks a lot.
See you guys.
That's awesome.